but certainly not to be overlooked as far as the importance of our next guest. And this is national sports columnist with Sports Weekly, Bob Nightingale. You know, if you listen as closely to this interview as I'm sure you read his columns, you know, you'll be very happy. But anyhow, Sports Talk 90.3, Steve, Andrew, Chris, happy to have Bob Nightingale. And Bob, it's nice to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. How are you doing, Steve?
All right, excellent. And, of course, Andrew and Chris here with us as well. So, very happy. I mean, so many people every, you know, single week clamor to pick up the paper and read what Bob Nightingale is talking about next. And so, pleasure to kind of pick your brain for a few minutes.
And you know what? We're in New York, and we're fairly parochial about our teams here. We sort of talk about every team in the major leagues with Bob. But this week, the Yankees cooperated by giving us some fodder for conversation. What's going on in the Bronx, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say panic is, but they better do something. And the team is just playing too bad at baseball for this to continue. You know, Bernie's been a problem. I think it was wise to get him out of the field. I think that elbow's getting hit. And, you know, the shaky thing is putting Womack in left because he hasn't played there since 99. And, you know, to even ask whether he can play, just said, you're moving to left field. And so you would think for a team that has a $200 million payroll, they should have more outfielders than a converted infielder.
Yeah, you especially a guy who could barely reach first base from second base with his throws. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you move a guy from left to center in Matsui, whose arm might be worse than Bernie's.
Yeah, you know, Matsui, you know, is kind of struggling at the plate right now, too. The last thing you want to do is, you know, move positions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that Torrey moved him down to the sixth hole today.
Yeah, he's scuffling right now, but, you know, he'll be there at the end. I mean, he's still as solid as anybody they have.
Now, if the Yankees keep this up before the July 31st deadline, do you think the Yankees will rewind and let Bernie play center field again and let Matsui play left and et cetera, or do you think they're going to keep this till July 31st?
I think it just depends on Bernie's elbow. I mean, they just don't want
to... Yeah, I don't think they have a choice in the matter.
Yeah, keep him out there with the way he was throwing. And, you know, the one good thing for the Yankees is that, you know, after the season, they're done with Bernie's contract and done with Kevin Brown's contract.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, about almost $30 million in clear up here.
Now, you reported this week in your Buzz part of your columns that Roger Clemens has an oral agreement with Drayton McClain that allows him to be traded if the Astros are out of the race. Do you see that likely happening?
I do. The only the Astros stink right now. They're just not scoring any runs. And I don't think he wants to spend his last year in the major leagues just, you know, going through the motions here. So, that being said, I mean, the Yankees have to be in the race for him to want to go there. So I think he would still love to finish up his career in a Yankee uniform because I think that's the cap he wants to wear the Hall of Fame.
And it's really interesting because here's two teams we're talking about, the Yankees and the Astros, both doing poorly. Both, I think, could be in much better shape if they had done what they needed to do. And the Yankees, they didn't have to do anything. But if they did what they needed to do to get Carlos Beltran playing for them, I mean, look where the Astros would be. Look where the Yankees would be. I mean, they'd have a marquee center fielder for the next 10 years. You wouldn't be talking about Matsui in center, Womack in left, and they probably wouldn't even have the money to go throw on soon to be on the DL. Well, you better know better than us on that with Randy Johnson and Pavano and Wright. They might still have Lieber, as Chris pointed out earlier. I think things could have been a lot better if they had this guy playing for him.
Yeah, I think they thought they didn't need him, you know, just because they put all the money to pitching, but obviously they got so much money. I think the thing that scared George off was just, okay, if you pay him $15-16 million a year, we're really paying him about $24 million a year for the luxury tax. But that being said, they pay the extra $8 million right now to have a better offense.
Now, if the Yankees keep this up and the Red Sox are still contenders, can you see maybe Clemens maybe just starting, well, let bygones be bygones and I'll go back to Boston, or forget this, I'll just stay in Houston?
No, I could definitely see him back in Boston. Just because it's a whole new regime, you know, and, you know, go back to his roots where he started from. The fact that all those guys that were there before are all gone now, so he doesn't have any bitterness toward this regime.
What a tough decision. Pitch with Schilling or pitch with Johnson. My goodness. Well, but it might be a much easier decision because one could have a legitimate shot at a World Series and the other couldn't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I still think the Yankees obviously will turn around. That rotation is too good. And, you know, I mean, Johnson's not pitching like himself. You know, neither has Pavano. Wright's on the DL, of course.
But, you know, it's just amazing how it seems to be a catchphrase in the entire, you know, sports world that the Yankees are going to be there. The Yankees will turn it around. Everything's going to be all right. But, you know, every day that goes by that they don't start to rattle off, you know, six straight wins, or they start to go, you know, 11 for 14, every day that goes by they don't start that, it gets harder and harder for when they finally, if they do turn it on, to get to 90 wins. I mean, you know, where do you put a realistic cutoff point that they need to get in gear?
Well, I mean, what's helping them out, and I'm sure that Boston's looking the same way, is that it's not Boston that's sitting in first place.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Baltimore Orioles.
Sure.
They're not going to have the pitching to hold off. Toronto Blue Jays are in second. They don't have the team to hold people off. So I think both the Yankees and Red Sox have a lot of comfort in the fact that both of them are scuffling right now.
So I guess it's too early to really decide how good or bad the Red Sox and the Yankees are. Granted, the Red Sox, I believe, are 5 games above 500 anyway. But you don't think Baltimore could really keep this going?
I think far-fetched to do so. I mean, I just can't see those pitchers holding on all year. You know, we see so many teams that get up to great starts, or even have a great first half, and then the depth isn't there. So I'm not sure Baltimore has that. I mean, I really don't think so right now. But the one thing is they do have money to spend, so they could go get some pitching help, you know, come late July.
We're talking to Bob Nightingale here on Sports Talk, 90.3 FM, WHPC. Now, I mean, I, for one, now, it may just be jumping on a bandwagon, but also because I'm kind of tired of Yankees-Red Sox, I, for one, am hoping the Orioles can keep this up and have somebody else in the mix because, I mean, the AL East has been just a bore. I mean, the Yankees win, the Red Sox get the wild card, then they slug it out in the playoffs. I'd like to see something new. I'd like to see, you know, the new kids in town stir things up. I mean, do you feel there's a sentiment like that? Have people seen this enough and they want something different? It could, you know, fans cheering doesn't really help, but you feel that there could be a little Kool-Aid being, you know, drank around to get the Orioles going?
Oh, sure. Now, I think there's a lot of fans across the country that would love to see the Yankees not make it in Boston, too. I mean, what are the odds of that? You know, that being said, even before the season started, I don't think the wild card's going to come from the East. So then you got a real dogfight. Because I think the wild card very easily might come from the Central Division. And if you have the Yankees, Red Sox going for just one spot, you know, what a great pennant race that is.
Now, you talked about the Central, which is what I was going to bring up. How good are the Chicago White Sox, honestly? They're 21-7. That guy's like Garcia, Burley, Garland, who my pal Chris over here just picked up on his fantasy team.
Podsednik.
How good are the Chicago White Sox right now?
You know, very good. I like to make the playoffs out of spring training. I just think it's like a National League-style team with great, you know, pitching, defense, and speed. You know, clearly they're not going to keep pitching like this all year. But by the same token, they're not going to hit like this all year either. I mean, they won today's game. I think they got 2 hits. They scored the winning runs on 2 bases loaded walks. So, but they're playing the game right, and they're doing it without Frank Thomas. Once Frank Thomas comes back, it should, you know, give a boost to that offense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's an ex-White Sox, Magly Wardonez. What were the Tigers thinking when they signed him?
I don't know. People were stunned, you know. No one else was going to give him that kind of money. I mean, the Mets are talking about maybe 1 year, 2 years, same Chicago Cubs. But, you know, to give this guy 5 years at 75 was crazy. It's just proven how crazy they were.
And, again, we're talking to Bob Nightingale here on Sports Talk. Now, you mentioned the Mets, and so we already talked about the Yankees, so let's go over them. First of all, you have Pedro Martinez, who obviously, you know, opening day, not his fault. The game gets blown by Looper, but other than that, he has just been stellar. And even the other night, it was Pedro and Beltran getting the job done. You know, what do you make of, you know, obviously the early report card for Pedro is stunning. Beltran seems to be he just hit his first homer at Shea the other night. But how do you make of the two big marquee additions and how they're coming around for the Mets?
Yeah, I mean, I know the Mets are getting blasted a little bit for signing Pedro to that 4-year deal, not 3 years. But, you know, he's only 33 years old. I like the move. I mean, I think Pedro's got a chance to do just what Clemens did last year. And let's be honest here, the National League right now is an inferior league. The lineups just are not nearly as strong, and you know, especially without the DH. And so Pedro can step in and just dominate like Clemens did last year. And, you know, Beltran, I think everybody saw what kind of player he was in the postseason. it's just a question of, you know, for him to be, do it consistently.
And who is Cliff Floyd, and what has he done with Cliff Floyd?
That's amazing. I was thinking about that today. How about the best trades never made? I mean, anybody in baseball could have had Cliff Floyd.
Yeah.
It's like the White Sox. Anybody could have had John Garland, their fifth starter, who's 4-0 now.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, Floyd right now is one of the best players in the National League.
Now, there is one Met who hasn't been doing well and hasn't for a while. That's Tom Glavine. Yeah. Did the Braves know something as always? Or
He's still a Brave.
Is he tipping his pitches? What do you make of it?
The thing about Glavine, though, is he's like Mannix. They do get off the slow starts. It's almost like you kids are trying to find that strike zone in finesse-type pitchers. You know, I still think he has plenty left and will turn it around. Yeah, but it's a big season for him, not just to, you know, playoffs or anything like that. But if he wants to make a Hall of Fame, because he's one of those borderline guys, if he has a lousy season, I think he kisses his Hall of Fame chances goodbye.
Hmm. Wow. One thing I think is for certain, because, you know, a power pitcher, you can learn some new tricks. He can learn to go finesse. Finesse pitchers, they have nowhere else to go, and especially when, well, you have some scapegoats like Questech, and then when you're out of the cozy confines of Turner Field where they, you know, make the chalk boxes for the catcher a little funky, and they set up outside and, you know, help the strike zone, and then they go to the Tim McCarver strike zone, it gets kind of tough on a guy who lives on that outside corner.
No, it does. It does. I mean, you better, you know, be pinpoint control. He doesn't have it right now. You know, the old days it was easier for him because umpires respected him and Maddox so much to give him 2 inches off that plate. But you're right with Questech now. Even though the umpires want to give it to him, they can't because then they'll get graded lower.
Now, gun to your head, what do you see Mike Piazza doing after this year?
That's a good question. I talked to him in January. I'm not sure. There's not a whole lot of value left. I think he has to be a DH, but yet he doesn't have the power as a DH anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think he'd ever want to be a backup. I'm not sure. I think he has to go to the America League, but I just don't think there's much of a market for him.
I think he needs to go to a broadcast booth. I think that's where he could be the most productive these days.
He's not
at the Home Run Derby every year.
when you talk to we've had people who Mets beat writers and the like, and they all say that of any baseball player, when they talk to Mike Piazza, he's the one guy who it seems could walk away from the game at any time, doesn't need it. Have you found that to be the case?
Well, yeah, I mean, I covered him right when he came up with the Dodgers, and he's the one kid that went to major leagues that, you know, whose dad is richer than he is.
Yeah.
I mean, his dad is, you know, worth probably about $200 million or so. And, you know, he's, you know, Piazza's made his money, very bright guy, very, very conservative. Yeah, he didn't have to work for a day in his life, even before he got to the big leagues.
Now, true or false, but I think I'm correct, Doug Minkiewicz, more home runs than Carlos Delgado. Who saw that coming?
Yeah, it's amazing. He's he's such a brilliant defensive first baseman. I really think he's the best defensive first baseman in the game.
Today, and he made one of the best plays I think I've seen in a long
time.
Double
play ball?
First base. Yeah.
That was a great play.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I saw him a lot in Minnesota. I mean, there's nobody like him. I mean, he's like a J.T. Snow, you know, was that good, that talented. And but yeah, he's a National League player. He's not going to hit you 30, 35 home runs. He'll give you, you know, maybe 20 if things go right.
And you know, so many people were disappointed that the Mets didn't put that, you know, icing on the cake, the cherry on top, in getting Delgado. But one thing about, you know, New York is that one of the guys they miss the most is John Olerud. Now, Doug Minkiewicz, like you just said, he's nowhere near the hitter that Olerud was. Olerud was the prototypical three-hitter and perfect to bat in between Fonzie and Piazza. But the defense that he gave you, you're seeing that with Minkiewicz. And the Mets, after seeing the nightmare that was the experiment with Piazza at first, after seeing just the horror of Mo Vaughn, and after seeing Todd Zeal, who wasn't terrible, but he was a third baseman, who they, for some reason, put at first, this is so refreshing to see these incredible plays be made at the line.
It is. I mean, people should pay, you know, money just to watch that Mets infield play defense. I mean, it's a fabulous defensive infield.
See, I think I'd rather have McCabe than Olerud because Olerud's a quiet type guy. Well, don't get me wrong, they made the World Series Olerud. Olerud's a good ball player. But a guy like McCabe, he gives the team character. He's one of the first guys on top of the steps, shaking guys' hands after making a good play. He's a great fielder. And you know what? I think he's a little bit more pop in the lineup, especially in the bottom of the order than John Olerud.
I'm sorry.
I'm just going to say, no question. I mean, I don't think you'd find a scout in the game that would pick John Olerud over Mikhaevich, particularly now. You might as well have Mikhaevich. I mean, he's brilliant defensively, the best in the game. And he probably gives you more offense than Olerud right now. Olerud's just not the same player anymore.
When the Mets decided last year to sign Kazuo Matsui and move this shortstop prospect, Jose Reyes, to second base, what were you thinking about it, and what had you heard from other people about that?
Well, the people that knew him in Japan thought it was a little bit crazy, saying, okay, you know, he can play both. This kid's going to be a little bit nervous also going to the state. Other Japanese players, you know, tend to put pressure on themselves, and they're not the same player when they first come over. And you know, as you guys know, Reyes was so close to shortstop, why weak in two positions, which is what happened. So, you know, it's an experiment. It didn't work. And we're going to make the playoffs anyway. At least now they know for sure, hey, we're going to have Matsui at second, Reyes second short.
Now, every team can never have enough bullpen help. I think the two best relievers that could be available are Urbina and Dotel. Do you hear anything on the trade winds? I know it's early, but do you hear anything out there with your ear to the ground?
Well, Urbina's available. I mean, the Tigers aren't going to go anywhere anyway, but Urbina's out there. Dotel isn't yet. I think what Billy Bean's going to do is just hold him off the top bidder come July. So they're still in the race. You know, once they pull out of it, Dotel will be available.
How many guys like Baez?
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to say the other guy, too, the third guy is Danny Baez. But people have such a hard time dealing with the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, just kind of throw their hands up in the air.
Now, you just mentioned the Devil Rays. Scott Kazmir.
I love that name.
We're just going to play word association. Scott Kazmir, take it from there.
Yeah, I mean, at least he hasn't won a game yet, right?
That's what I said on Tuesday night.
There you go,
Bob.
Oh. We knew that was coming.
Better, but yeah, I think, you know, from people you talk to, is that, you know, Rick Peterson and some of the coaches had more as much input as anybody for making that trade. But yeah, I mean, Zabano's not a bad pitcher. He certainly has not pitched in New York like he did in Tampa.
Well, one thing is for certain. I was watching Kazmir the other night. And when and if he puts everything together, I mean, his slider, I mean, to go along with that just fireball he's got for a fastball, his slider's disgusting. It's just nasty. And guys just can't see it. He's invisible when he's on. If he's able to get some more control and last, you know, longer into these games, I mean, he's going to be a force.
Yeah, it could be one of those things where I was covering the Kansas City Royals when they traded away David Cohn at a young age. Mm-hmm. Didn't think that he was going to do anything, and of course, exploded once he went to the Mets.
Well, there was a pitcher who started the year as a sixth starter last year and wound up winning the Cy Young pitching in Minnesota and did put it all together. Johan Santana, what are your impressions
He's
of him?
Okay.
Well, the you know, last year he had the elbow coming off elbow surgery, so that's why he kind of scuffled early on. But this guy is a, you know, put him in New York or Chicago or L.A., he'd be a household name. Hmm. Just dominant, start after start. I mean, he gives up two hits, and that's a game that he ends a 17-game winning streak. Just a phenomenal pitcher and a phenomenal person as well.
Now, speaking of pitching, I'm a Brave fan, believe it or not, living in New York. And the one thing that I believe, the only thing right the Braves are doing right now to stay above water is their pitching staff. Besides their pitching staff, they're both there. Bullpen's pretty good, but their lineup is pretty bad besides Chipper. Why are the Braves doing what they're doing right now, about five or six games above 500?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, just the pitching. I mean, they have not hit yet. And, you know, come July, they'll go get an outfielder. They're not going to live with Mondesi and Blythe and Jordan. You look at the, you know, Mike Hampton, it looks like the Mike Hampton of old.
Mm-hmm.
Hampton's pitching great. And, you know, Danny Cole as a closer is just okay. But, I mean, this might be a better playoff team than the teams of old, just because you have to have power pitchers come playoff time. You can't live with having like a Max and Glavine, you know, going as your top two guys.
Now I know it's too early to decide, but would you say that the Braves got the better end of the Hudson deal and the A's got the better end of the Mulder deal?
I want to say the Braves definitely. I mean, those two guys that came over haven't done a thing. They've looked terrible. The pitcher's stunk, and the outfielder, I think, he's got maybe one hit.
Yeah, Thomas is awful.
Yeah. Now, St. Louis, you know, those guys are decent guys, but, hey, you look at Mulder. Mulder looks great right now. He's 4-1. So really, he's, that trade's working out for both sides. Mulder's everything the Cardinals had hoped.
Now, we had just mentioned the Minnesota Twins pitcher, Johan Santana. The Twins also just had, in this great steroid hunt of 2005, the most, the biggest name, I guess, in baseball, which is really not a big name, Juan Rincon.
But he's important to that team.
Yes. So what do you make of the steroid policy, and do you think there's any kind of, I know it's the latest thing that the union's bringing up, a language barrier, given the number of Dominican players who've been caught up in the web?
I think it's more of an economic barrier. And Rincon's part, it's a case where he claims that he got the shot from the Twins himself, kind of fighting a viral infection, and that there's steroids in there. I mean, he swears up and down it wasn't him. So he wasn't a guy that was a classic abuser of steroids. But I think you're seeing so many Dominican kids now just because they can't afford the designer drugs. I mean, they're taking steroids, which is almost passe. You can't test for human growth hormones or stuff that's even better than human growth hormones. That will only show up in blood work. It won't show up in urine. That's why you'll never see a big star get caught.
And not only that, you know, these players down in the Dominican, where every single kid dreams of, you know, escaping through Major League Baseball, if everybody's got the same idea, you need something to rise above the rest. And I think David Ortiz was speaking to that, you know, in the Latin community, that this is a big problem because these guys need, you know, some way to get out.
Oh, exactly. I mean, just there's so much money to be made. I mean, just a guys that weren't prospects, you know, all of a sudden got, you know, big and strong. You know, I'm not saying Mike Piazza used steroids. Mike Piazza was a 62nd round draft pick. All of a sudden, he was big as Arnold Schwarzenegger. So whatever he was doing, he made himself into a major league player. And I think you saw a lot with guys.
Now, the number one poster child for suspicious growth, Barry Bonds. I've read your articles over the years, and it seems like if he can have a good relationship with anybody or any writer, he's got a good relationship with you. Take us through some of your experiences with Barry Bonds.
I like the guy a lot personally. I mean, there's not a phony bone in his body. But, you know, what you see is what you get. And the thing I feel sorry for Bonds is that people forget this guy was a Hall of Fame player well before he hit 73 home runs. I think what might have happened here, and I remember talking to him in spring training, he was very upset when Sosa and McGuire got all the attention there in 98, like they were the best two players in the game. It's like, wait a minute now, you know, I'm better than these two guys. So whatever, you know, whatever he did, whatever he took, so okay, you know, I'll show you what stuff can do. You know, he hit 73 homers. He could have hit 95 if he got pitches.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. You know, we have a caller who constantly calls up who always talks about that, you know, if they'd only pitched to him, imagine what he could do. And the point you brought up is amazing. I mean, the amount of times that he gets walked and still hits the home runs, it's unbelievable. And now there's talks that you may not see Barry Bonds this season, and you may not see Barry Bonds, period.
Yeah, no, I don't believe that. I still believe that you'll see him. I don't know what happened. I mean, the doctor, something happened for him to have the infection. That should be happening in the United States in this day and age.
And that was reported in your sister publication, the USA Today, that doctor's been suspended and had a lot of allegations about him. But he was handpicked by Barry Bonds instead of Luis Yo.
And that's the thing.
Yeah, something's wrong. Yeah, they screwed that whole thing up. So instead of coming back in mid-May or late May, you know, now you're talking about the All-Star break or late July.
And there's questions about whether or not Barry Bonds was following his team's instructions on how to get this treated.
Yeah, there is. And I think I was around him a lot in spring training, and I know he overdid it.
Well, I guess maybe he had to find a doctor who knows how to prescribe around the stuff he's already taking.
Yeah, something wasn't working right, but you shouldn't have an infection in your knee.
Not
the kind of money that the ball players are making in the teams.
Now, a little closer to us, but related to Balco, Jason Giambi, if he was a steak, would he be medium done or well done?
You know, and he's one of those guys, a little bit like McGuire and some of these other guys. We don't know what kind of player he would have been without steroids.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I first saw him, I said, man, this guy's like a McGuire clone. I mean, all those guys looked alike in Oakland. in Oakland and Texas, those are like the two steroid kings, those teams.
Mm-hmm.
Loaded up there in the mid to late 80s. So, you know, and people feel sorry for him because he's a nice guy, he really is. And, let's be honest, Giambi told the truth in those hearings, and that's what got him in trouble. A lot of guys lied and got away with it.
But to me, I understand that he does separate himself from the other guys and that he did tell the truth in there. But for me, I'm not going to give him a medal just yet because he only told the truth because he was under the impression, and under the understanding, that no one would find out. And so I'm not going to sit here and say that to give him all this credit for telling the truth. He only told it because no one would find out. And finally, when it leaked and it was out in the open, then he shuts up. So
I agree with you. I mean, it sounded like he told the truth, reporters ahead of time or
right.
Get people off. But on the other hand, this guy flunked his physical twice when he first joined the Yankees. Yankees know exactly what they were getting. Everybody in the game knew this guy was using steroids.
Well, and they even shot themselves in the foot and probably could have been out from under this contract long ago, but they took the word steroids out of the contract.
Yeah, and they knew that. I mean, that's why he flunked those physicals. Everybody knew he was on steroids.
Wow.
So I get a little bothered by, these terms and even by the ceiling saying, okay, now we're going to clean up steroids.
And that's
everybody in the game knew what was going on since the late 80s.
I was going to say, you've been covering baseball for a long time. Have you obviously saw it and discussed it, but because of libel laws and stuff, you couldn't say things like that, right, or write things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about, stories, early 90s, mid-90s, as far as rampant steroid use, and all the owners and GMs said they knew what was going on. Even Bud Selig commented way back then. Yeah, you couldn't name names, for just like you said, just without fear of getting sued, since you didn't have the actual proof of seeing the guy inject himself.
Now, do you have players, or have you had players speaking off the record to you saying, that guy's a juicer, that guy's a juicer?
Oh, all the time.
Wow. And that's why I was so glad to have you on tonight, because as I tell our audience all the time, they read you, but I think I'm the biggest commercial you'll ever have. Because you get these articles where guys just open up to you like you wouldn't believe. Like you're in with the agents, Jeff Morad, where Matt Williams is getting traded. Just everything you're in on. And we're honored to have you on, Bob.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. I met up the Schilling testified in front of Congress. Yeah, I think he said he knew four or five players. And one of the Diamondbacks players told me four or five. He goes, we had 10 guys on our 2001 championship team.
Wow.
Oh, did one of them have his gum sold? On?
he hasn't had any telltale injuries.
Now, speaking of Schilling, you had mentioned in one of your articles this week, in this week's Sports Weekly, out in the newsstands now, that Curt Schilling and Lou Piniella spoke. How did that conversation go?
I'm not sure who initiated. I think Schilling called Piniella, just calling a truce. And I think Schilling was a little surprised that Piniella lashed back. A little bit like Matt Giordano's surprise, the way Ozzie Guillen came after him.
I think
they kind of agreed, like, okay, let's quit trashing each other here.
Well, anyhow, listen, this has been a fantastic half hour with Bob Nightingale, and we're so happy to add you on to the show tonight, and you added so much to it, and we'd love to be able to do it again.
Yeah, my pleasure, anytime.
All right.
Thanks,
Steve,
Bob.
Steve, Andrew, Chris, we're going to take you up on that open invitation, but for now, we'll thank you, and have a good night.
All right, you guys too. Take care.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, so that was just... what do you say?
I love having writers like that. All around the nation, like all the sports.
You have to read his stuff because he gets these guys opening up to him. Like you would not believe.
Well,
what
he just
saying,
told
like,
us stuff. Before.
Two things right there. Jason Giambi failed his physical with the Yankees.
Not once.
Twice. Before he was signing the nine figure contract, $100 million.
So the Yankees
contract.
Knew about it.
They
already.
Knew it. So there you go.
And 2001 World Series
champion. 2001. At least 10 on
the team.
Yeah, guys. On steroids.
516-572-7440. I know you like that interview. Call us up, let us know, and talk about whatever you want. So with the two Bobs, it just kept getting better and better and better. One thing is for certain. Well, first of all, the Giambi thing, tremendous. But one thing that was great about that interview, you ask him a question or you make a statement, and there's a little pause, and then he just, boom, hits you.
Yeah,
I think
that was the delay in talking to Minneapolis on the phone.
But that was a bold
either
point.
Way, it made for a great effect.